on the edge of evolution, awakening our power to co-create our lives and shape our collective future. My name is Paula Dowd, and I'm the Program Director of Feminine Power Global Community, the organization producing this event. And I am delighted to welcome you to Part 13 in our series today, featuring Marianne Williamson, who will be discussing her latest project, Sister Giant, Rousing the Sleeping Giant of American Womanhood. But before we begin, I'd like to take a moment to thank all of you for your active participation in this dialogue, both live on the teleseminar last week and also on our Facebook and Gaia groups. We continue to be inspired by the incredible support and enthusiasm that is coming in from all corners of the globe. As of this week, we have nearly 7,000 members on our Facebook group and a very rich engagement going on in our Gaia community, which continues to grow every day. If you haven't yet jumped into the conversation and would like to connect with other women who are participating in the series, we encourage you to join us. You can find links to both our Facebook and Gaia groups in the confirmation email we sent you for today's call. We also want to thank our event partners and evolutionary sisters, Siona Van Dyke at Gaia Community and Rochelle Marmerstein at The Shift Movie, as well as our 8 co-sponsors for all of their support. If you are joining us for the first time today, the way the call will work is that I will introduce Claire Zammit, who is one of the 2 visionary women behind this groundbreaking series, and then she will introduce Marianne Williamson and today's topic and call process. Claire is the co-creator with Catherine Woodward Thomas of our Feminine Power Transformative Courses designed just for women. Together, they co-lead a global learning community dedicated to empowering women to realize their highest potentials and make their greatest contribution. Claire is a transformative educator, a speaker, and a writer. She has a gift and a passion for designing and delivering content that gives access to life-altering paradigm shifts. Her work emphasizes the relationship between personal and social transformation and the power of creating learning communities that support insights and intentions in a way that they become lasting change. Claire is currently completing her doctorate in the field of transformative learning and change at the California Institute of Integral Studies, and she's researching the life-changing transformations of women in our year-long Feminine Power Mastery Program. She is also co-author of the upcoming book, Feminine Power, Awakening to the Creative Force of Life. So welcome, Claire. And I know I speak for all of us when I say how much we're looking forward to your dialogue with Marianne today.
Thank you so much, Paula, and welcome to all of you who have just joined us. We are a global community of over 35,000 women who are standing with and for each other in awakening our co-creative power and actively engaging and co-creating the future. And each week we're engaging with dialogue on Wednesday evenings and Saturday mornings with an evolutionary woman leader on different topics related to coming into the fullness of our power and contribution. And after each call, we're now hosting an evolutionary women's cafe on a new technology called Maestro Conference for around a half hour. At the end of each call, we'll be inviting you to join us and break into small groups over the phone and engage in a discussion about today's topic. And just a reminder, you do need to register for the evolutionary cafe separately. So if you'd like to participate in tonight's cafe, if you just follow the link that's in the email that you receive with the access codes, you can register, and we'll give you instructions about how to join us at the end of the program. And tonight I am honored to be here with one of the great evolutionary women leaders of our time, someone who embodies what it is to be a woman on the edge of evolution, who has been a true pioneer, whose tireless spiritual leadership and fearless activism have been pushing the edge of consciousness and culture for over 26 years now. Marianne Williamson is here to speak with us about the role of this pivotal moment in history that women must play in leading the way from disastrous probabilities to fantastic possibilities. She's hosting a groundbreaking event in Los Angeles at the end of next month called Sister Giant, in which she'll be going in much greater depth into many of the ideas that we're going to be exploring on the call today, And we'll give you information about that a little bit later on. So I want to invite all of you to just really pay attention, and if you're feeling called and inspired, to really come and participate in that event in Los Angeles next month. Marianne is an internationally acclaimed spiritual teacher. Her latest book, The Age of Miracles, hit number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list. Among her other 9 published books, 4 of them, including A Return to Love, were on the number 1 New York Times bestseller list. A Return to Love is considered a must-read of the new spirituality. A paragraph from that book, beginning, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate, our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure," is often misattributed to Nelson Mandela's inaugural address and is considered an anthem for contemporary generations of seekers. Marianne's other books include Everyday Grace, A Woman's Worth, Illuminata, Healing the Soul of America, The Gift of Change, and Emma and Mommy Talk to God. And Marianne's archive, Miracle Thoughts, can be heard on Oprah.com. She has been a popular guest on television programs such as Oprah, Larry King Live, Good Morning America, and Charlie Rose. In 1989, she founded Project Angel Food, a Meals on Wheels program that serves homebound people with AIDS in Los Angeles. Today, Project Angel Food serves over 1,000 people daily. See what's happening here with the sound.
Sounds like you're muted.
There's a just a problem here with the sound.
Sound.
Just trying to. Okay, I think we're back. Apologies for that, everybody. You know, I think our lines are just being completely maxed out here. I can see there's a huge audience of us gathering here tonight for this conversation. So in 1989, she founded Project Angel Food, a Meals on Wheels program that serves homebound people with AIDS in the Los Angeles area. And today, Project Angel Food serves over 1,000 people daily. Marianne also co-founded the Peace Alliance, a grassroots campaign supporting legislation to establish a U.S. Department of Peace. And what I so deeply admire and respect about Marianne is the fearless courage of her pioneering spirit. She's taken so many risks in her life to break new ground and move the collective conversation forward, that we're able to come together tonight for this conversation as a global community of women, in part is as a result of her tireless contribution to the evolution of culture itself. So I am just thrilled and delighted to welcome you, Marianne, to Women on the Edge of Evolution.
Well, thank you, Claire, and I want to thank you for that very generous introduction. That was very kind of you. I'm honored.
So many of us are sensing that we're at a turning point, at a pivotal moment in our human history, and that this rise to power, particularly of women in the Western world, holds a lot of hope and a lot of possibility, and there's a significant role that we're being called in to shape the future. What do you see about that?
Well, in terms of our sensing that it's a pivotal moment, you don't have to even sense it. Your rational brain can pick that up. There are absolutely unsustainable stress points on our planet, environmental, nuclear. There are just many ways that the probability vectors are quite grim. Now, in terms of any hope that is engendered by the fact that women are rising in power, on one hand, that's true, but in another sense, I don't think this is a moment for us to indulge any level of self-congratulations, because the truth of the matter is that although women in the Western world do hold tremendous power, politically, socially, and financially, it cannot be said that we are currently applying that power collectively in a way that is making a dent in those vectors of which I spoke. We have 17,000 children on this planet who die every day of hunger. That's 1 every 5 seconds. And supposedly that 17,000 figure is a conservative estimate. So I don't think it can be said that we're doing quite yet what it is that we need to do. We have become far more conscious, and I think organizations such as yours are certainly examples of a rising tide of consciousness, but we need to make that awareness far more directional and quickly in order for it to be said that women are making the change.
Hmm. So your upcoming event focuses on the awakening of American women. Do you see a unique role that American women have to play? And what are your thoughts about women in other areas of the world?
Well, not American women, but Western women in general hold, in terms of citizens of the industrialized nations of the West, hold unique advantages politically, socially, and financially. And yet the truth of the matter is that some of the most powerful activism is coming from women in certain parts of the world who have far less than we do
mm-hmm.
in terms of external advantages. So I am fascinated by, and on a certain level horrified by, why this is. You know, one of the common anthropological characteristics of all advanced mammalian species who survive and thrive is fierce behavior on the part of the adult female of the species when she senses a threat to her cubs. For instance, among the hyenas, the adult female hyenas encircle the baby hyenas while they're feeding and will not let the adult males get anywhere near the food until the babies have been fed. So I thought to myself, surely we could do better than the hyenas. And if, just even in the United States alone, for no other reason than the vast power center that we just happen to be by sheer nature of our size and you know, financial state, if the women of America alone, of course the women of the world, it goes without saying, but there are so many women who do try their best in countries where their access to governmental and financial influence is so much less than ours. What if American women alone stood up in a way that made the difference and said about every single piece of legislation ever passed in Congress, tell me how many children will be fed because of this? You know, our governmental system in the United States is so corrupted by money. In the absence of public financing of political campaigns, I assume this will remain so. And what that means is that corporate entities who can afford highly paid full-time lobbyists who, you know, are assigned, there are about six of them at least, to every lawmaker, they have a voice. Their money talks. Well, starving children are not represented by highly paid corporate lobbyists. There's no financial power vested in the hands of a starving child. They don't have that. They don't represent a financial interest, and therefore their influence is not what perhaps morally we would argue that it should be. What they have in terms of the natural order of things is the mothers of the world. And I'm from a generation that, you know, growing up in the 60s and the 70s, I looked at my mother, and my mother was a very traditional woman in terms of her lifestyle. She adored my father, and her life was devoted to him and to their children and to creating a home. And when I was growing up, it was a time and a chapter in feminism where it was very tempting to believe that my mother's life wasn't meaningful enough, and I mm-hmm. thought that there was something out there far more meaningful. And it took me years to understand that, first of all, there is no world out there. You know, it's all just a projection of thought, that out there is no more important than in here, neither more important nor less important, but that the archetype of homemaker, the archetype of the divine feminine, is she who takes care of the home, is she who takes care of the hearth, is mm-hmm. she who takes care of the children. It's just that now we're evolving into the recognition that this entire earth, this entire world is our home, and every single child on the planet is one of our children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fascinated by what will happen, and I have to believe that it will happen, when enough women like awaken to this and get that true feminism, divine feminism, goes beyond me getting what I want, me getting what I need. And it means that we can now take the journey into a larger concept of we, larger concept of divine mother, not just as some gossamer symbol, but as a very, very meaningful protection of every child on this planet.
Mm-hmm. So that's really powerful. And so what I hear you saying is it's really this awakening of the feminine at this new world-centric level of consciousness that holds the possibility of transforming our world.
You know, one of the things I noticed among men in the last few years, I would notice how many men seem to love talking about the divine feminine and honoring the divine feminine and embracing the divine feminine, but they seem to have a problem with real women. And I think that it's not just men who fall into this trap sometimes. I think it's women too. There, to me, the conversation of the divine feminine is not separate from a conversation about real women, and that means us. And I think that there's a trap in separating those two.
So what's, you know, how can we really give access to this reawakening of feminine identity in a way that will empower us?
Well, first of all, any woman who is on this phone, yourself and Catherine obviously included, are already doing that. I mean, I think it's important any step along our journey to honor ourselves and give credit, you know, for how far we've come. When I said this is not a moment to indulge in self-congratulations, I didn't mean that we shouldn't give ourselves credit for the changes that we have made. And like I said, the very fact that we're on this call right now, A Course in Miracles says that an idea grows stronger when it's shared. So, you know, I honor the fact that a conversation is emerging, and your call, other people, groups, so many of us are already tilling the fields. And I think that now it's about just knowing. It's like let's say you have your lights on and you're going through a dark patch of the road. You turn your brights on. I think a lot of us have lights on. We need to just turn on our brights right now. We need to take advantage of every possible opportunity that resonates with us to show up, to not just think about it. You know, the era of data collection is over. I've been saying recently, we've all read the same books. We've all listened to the same tapes. We all get the concept. Now we have to turn it into action. You know, the earthquake in Haiti, I heard Sam Daly Harris the other day say something very important. He said, Haiti, the earthquake in Haiti, is a screaming emergency. But the truth of the matter is there are silent emergencies every single day. And even before the earthquake in Haiti, as I said, just the 17,000 children dying on this planet of hunger every single day. So I think that the earthquake in Haiti has let a genie out of the bottle, a truly beautiful thing. There had been a conversation about the global brain before this, but I think what we've seen in the response to the Haitian earthquake is a kind of global heart. But we must take advantage of this moment, harness this energy, and not let the genie go back into the bottle once Haiti's taken care of, because there are people all over this planet suffering daily the way the victims of the earthquake in Haiti suffer. And as I said before, the advanced mammalian species that is known anthropologically to thrive is one in which the adult female of the species doesn't let that happen. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we are letting that happen actually displays behavior that would mean that we do not intend to survive. So the red, you know, the red lights are blinking now. I think that we know this, and I believe what the Course in Miracles says is that every single person has a highly individualized curriculum. So every woman on this call knows either what her next step is, or is alert to what it might be, and I honor that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that really strikes me as extraordinary in terms of how you are crafting this event next month in Sister Giant is that you're going to be engaging the historical forces that have quelled our voices as women. And many of us have this experience of being dislocated from our own knowing at times, even though at other times we do have a sense of it's there, it's somehow we don't quite trust it. And somehow we sort of see this lack of confidence or the insecurity that we feel as a personal problem or failure. And yet it's like in awakening to this larger context of our history, we can see ourselves as part of a larger story. So I'm just wondering if you can share maybe a few things about these hidden forces that have quelled our voices and what it's really going to take for us to reawaken them.
Well, you articulate it very well, and you're absolutely right. You know, knowledge is power. And knowing your history is important. And I think many women in the Western world are very ignorant, not stupid, obviously, but ignorant of some of the historical forces that have brought us where we are. And I am bringing into the Sister Giant conference, seminar, pieces of information that have meant a lot to me personally, that were real big pieces of the puzzle for me and that I think might be to other women as well. The first one has to do with the Inquisition and the witch burnings. I know many women on the phone have probably read that wonderful book by Marion Zimmer Bradley, The Mists of Avalon. And many of us are interested in the Celtic world and the pagan priestesses and, you know, the whole exaltation of women that was represented by some of those cultures. Well, what happened was with the Inquisition, the early church came to dominate Western culture. And one of the things that they needed to do was to suppress the pagan priestesses. So what the witch burnings were, and remember, historians say anywhere up to something like 800,000 women might have been burned at the stake. And I think if we just take a moment to consider what kind of a death that would be. You know, if you go to any of the smaller villages in Europe, England, British Isles, etc., you often see these museums of torture. These women were accused of being witches, and they, of course, said that they did not cavort with the devil. They did not sleep with the devil. And the church fathers, quote-unquote, would torture them into confessing, and then once they, quote-unquote, confessed, it would be considered legal to burn them at the stake. And what this was about was an effort to suppress this pagan culture, to suppress powerful free-thinking women, because powerful free-thinking women raise powerful free-thinking children, and powerful free-thinking children grow up to be powerful free-thinking adults who, of course, are very difficult to manipulate and almost impossible to control. One of the things that's so interesting about this, to me, is that the destruction of that culture was really the beginning of the environmental crisis in Western civilization, because the pagan priestesses had a strong sense of humanity's divine connection to nature. These were women who held aloft the rituals and the ceremonies which helped people feel a divine and direct connection with the sky and with the earth and with the rocks and with the trees and with the waters. And what the early church was introducing, they wanted to destroy a sense of humanity in partnership with nature, which existed during pagan culture, and to introduce a mentality which posited that humanity had the right to dominate nature and use nature for its purposes. So many, many women suffered, and suffered horribly, and many men and children, of course, suffered as well, seeing their mothers and their sisters and their daughters dragged away to be tortured and killed. Now, and by the way, the last pope had officially apologized for the Inquisition, and it was certainly about time. But what this did was, you have centuries of this going on. Now think about this. If you know that any female who exhibits magic in a sense that you and I would use magic, passion and power and intuitive knowing and a sense of herbs and a sense of nature and a sense of ritual and a sense of midwifery and a sense of intuition, if you knew that this magic of the heart was liable to have her deemed a witch and then killed, that would mean that you would get into the habit of training your daughters to be very quiet and very subtle and to suppress their magic. Mm-hmm. And then enough generations of this go by, you don't even know anymore why you're doing this.
Right.
It's just become so ingrained that women are told to be very, very quiet. So when I learned more about this, I felt the cellular memory of it all. I felt that this was a huge piece of the puzzle, because women don't even know why we're so quiet. You know, when you see little girls in kindergarten, they're not quiet. So the first thing we're going to do, one of the first things we're going to do at this seminar, is watch a short film that was put out by the Canadian Film Board called The Burning Times. And it gives you a sense of that, of what happened. And then what I want to do is, we'll sit around in groups of five, and every woman will go around the circle and talk about what she learned and what she got from this, and how this put together a piece of the puzzle, and what cellular memory was true for her. Then we'll go back around the circle again, and every woman will talk about in her own life, given the fact that when you were a little girl, you had a voice, what happened? You know, this is the way these things become dismantled. And then the second, later in the seminar, we are going to watch a short film that was an HBO special with starring Hilary Swank a few years ago called Iron-Jawed Angels, about the women's suffrage movement. Because once again, so many American women just have this vague understanding, oh yeah, we didn't have the right to vote, and then we did. But they don't know what happened there. They don't know how women sacrificed. They don't know how women suffered. They don't know what these women went through and what it meant that we went from being women who, you know, in the early part of our history, let's say a woman was beaten regularly by her husband and her husband beat her and beat her children. Well, she could leave, but if she left, first of all, she could not take her children. She could take the clothes on her back. She could take one suitcase and whatever clothes or whatever were in that suitcase. And even if she had brought money into the marriage, the money stayed with her husband.
Wow.
I mean, most women just like don't know. And when you know this history, you just sit within such a different sense of place of power within yourself.
Mm.
And then later, the third film we watch is called Pray the Devil Back to Hell, which is this extraordinary film, a documentary made by Abigail Disney about some African women and the extraordinary changes that they've made at this time. Then the next day, we listen to Sam Daly Harris from the Results Organization, the premier lobbying, anti-hunger and anti-poverty lobbying organization, citizen lobbying, of course, in our country. And every woman will leave there, if she feels moved, very plugged into ways that she can help in eradicating poverty and hunger on our planet, either domestically or internationally, including, if she so desires, coming along for a trip to Kenya in April to be a part of American delegation at the Middle East Regional Microcredit Conference. So I know you have a global community here, and I got, you know, as soon as we put up the Sister Giant banner, you know, I got calls from friends in England and France, hey, why just American? And certainly the movement of energy that this represents has definitely international implications, and I hope it expands. But right now, American women, we have to have a conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we have some very American things to discuss. And if we put it out to the global community, I mean, certainly women can come, but I don't want to have to feel apologetic for the fact that there will be some conversations that are American-centric, because there's some issues that I think we need to discuss in a group.
Well, it does seem to be a very significant moment for us in America. In terms of last October, there was something published about women outnumbering men in the workforce, and over 40% of women now being the primary breadwinners. So it really is this big moment for the reclamation of our voice, that there aren't any external factors or you know, certainly as big as they once were in times of the Inquisition and the witch hunts to oppress us. It's like, so what do we need to really embrace, or where do we need to grow and develop to be willing to reclaim our voice to the fullness of the possibility that's now present?
Well, that's exactly the point. It's more psychological factors. It's more emotional factors. And that's exactly the point of Sister Giant. It's not enough to just put out, you know, we can do this external activism. We have some internal activism to do, and it's exactly for the reason you said. It's not for the American woman. We're not held back by external factors. We're held back by internal factors. And that's exactly the point, and that's why I think Sister Giant is a unique conversation, because it is addressing the internal chains that bind us as much as any external chains, which, for that matter, don't even exist compared to the way they exist for other women around the world.
Hmm. Well, Catherine was at one of your Los Angeles Weekly events recently, and a man was asking about this beautiful quote of yours, "Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate, our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure." And I believe he was asking you why that was, and your response to him was about us not wanting to be responsible for what that might mean. And we find that this is a huge issue for us as women, and I'm wondering if you can speak to our collective reluctance to take full responsibility for the power that we now hold to really shape the future.
Well, if you own that what you do matters, if you own that because all minds are joined, every individual can make a profound difference. If you own that the power of God is in you, no more or no less than anyone else, if you own that the power of possibility in your life is greater than any wound or chain that binds you from the past, then that means you recognize a tremendous responsibility to live as impeccably as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot to take on, but ultimately it's also the only doorway into a life of genuine joy and excitement and high drama. You know, you grow to a point, if you're lucky, where your neuroses become boring to you. I mean, they're already boring to others, let me assure you. So I think that this issue of claiming our greatness is deep, because it means claiming the greatness of God that is within you, and that is not something just that you receive, but something that you activate by extending to others.
Hmm. And so that's, you know, that really sounds and feels like a big step for us. You know, what might be a larger context that we could awaken to that might actually give us the motivation to have the courage to really take that on?
Well, I think in everybody's life, there's a different next piece. In everybody's life, there's a different aha moment. In everybody's life, there's a different book or saying or teacher or conversation or path or movie or experience, something that makes you go, yes. And we're all, once again, going back to this idea that there's a highly individualized curriculum for each of us. We're all going through things that are eye-opening. Now, the offering that Sister Giant is, because it feels to me like a next step, it's my offering. I can't know if it will feel like a next step to others, but for those who do resonate with it, who feel like, yes, I have to dismantle some internal things that lead to my relative quietude and complacency as much as deal with external forces, then I hope they'll be there. You know, if you go to www.marianne.com or mariannewilliamson.com, either one, you will see about Sister Giant, and you will see how to register for Sister Giant. And I hope that women will come from all over the country and be part of this conversation and part of this internal and external activism that I know can make a difference in the lives of many people.
Absolutely. And we will be giving those details again to go and visit marianne.com to find out more about the events. And Marianne, as a spiritual teacher, you've been a tireless activist, you know, pretty much your whole career, and you've emphasized the need for us to be taking actions as well as doing our inner work, to be of service for others as well as developing our own consciousness. And The Course in Miracles asserts that only love is real and anything else is a misperception. And some of us have interpreted that to mean all the pain and the suffering in the world is an illusion. What would you say to that?
Well, The Course in Miracles does say that it's an illusion. I mean, that part is true, but don't stop there. That's a real half reading of the Course to stop there. It is an illusion, fear, but The Course in Miracles says that illusion is as powerful in its effects as is the truth. In other words, this entire three-dimensional reality is an illusion, but that doesn't mean that there aren't people suffering within this three-dimensional illusion who are starving or beneath the rubble of an earthquake. So the Course in Miracles, there's a very powerful line. There are gazillions of powerful lines, but one that speaks to what you're saying goes like this. Look at the crucifixion, but do not dwell on it. The crucifixion means the manifestation of fear. Now, if you don't look at it, you are not in transcendence. You are in denial, and you're using this half-baked understanding of some spiritual principle to justify your looking away from unnecessary human suffering. There's no way that a genuine spiritual path ever has you turn your eyes, avert your eyes, when people are suffering. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways you know it can't be the truth. The Course in Miracles says, look at it, but do not dwell on it. If you dwell on it and you just live in, oh, isn't it awful, then you do become part of it because you become cynical and you become angry and you become victimized, you know, a victim. That's true if all you do is see the darkness and think it's real. But if you try to skip that part and go straight to the resurrection, then, as I said, you're not in transcendence. You're not in spiritual perspicacity. You're in denial. And the Course makes that very clear.
Hmm. Well, many of us really live with the tension also of feeling like we are imperfect vessels to be able to step into positions of power and responsibility. And I love this thing on the invitation for Sister Giant about, you know, I may not be perfect, but I'm ready. So I'm wondering what you might say to women listening who might be struggling with, feeling not quite ready. Like how might we know when we're truly ready? We've been trying to get ready for such a long time.
Yeah, that is such a good point. I'm so glad you brought it up. The Course in Miracles has a line, do not be concerned about your own readiness, just be consistently aware of mine. Of course we're imperfect vessels. Of course we are. The point is that there is something in us but not of us that is perfect. When Jesus in the Bible said, the Father within me doeth the work. We're not talking here from a context where we're going to wait till we're all perfect enlightened masters. I mean, if we were going to say, I'll wait till I'm a perfect enlightened master to help heal the world is doomed indeed. You don't wait till you've got it all together and then give your life to God to use for his purposes. It's quite the opposite. You give your life to God while you're still a mess. And then the fact that it is surrendered to God to be used on his behalf is part of what heals you.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't wait till you have it all together. You surrender now, and that's part of the way it comes together.
That's really profound. It's like that's what heals you, that's actually the path in which you're going to be able to have the opportunity to grow yourself beyond.
Absolutely. You're the problem. You're not the answer. So the idea that you're going to make yourself right when you're the one who got it all wrong, it's preposterous if you think about it.
So
there
really,
is, in traditional Christianity, there is a concept called the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And it's a powerful concept because it's, as I said before, you don't harness your own gifts and give them to God. You give your life to God and your higher gifts begin to blossom.
Mm. That's such a huge shift in orientation.
Mm-hmm.
To like the lived experience of where our attention is on our own inadequacies. And it's almost like in what you're saying, in kind of shifting to take your attention to a different place. Like, that's really the only way we're actually going to be able to get beyond ourselves.
Well, what you said, you know, you just said shift your attention, and that's what a miracle is. The Course in Miracles says a miracle is a shift in perception. So the Course in Miracles says that you are heir to the laws that rule the world that you identify with. If you only identify with your small separate self, your drama of this lifetime, your body, your resume, your mistakes, your past, what other people have done to you, if this is all the only context you have for your life experience, then you are relatively powerless and you are dwelling under the rules of a world in which limitation and scarcity reign. However, when you, as you said, shift your attention to the spiritual truth of your life, which is a power in you but not of you, to God's light within you, then you know that while as a mortal being, none of us are perfect, the immortal spirit within all of us is perfect, then you know that it's not about your past, it's about the miraculous opportunities of the present. It's not about blaming yourself or others, it's about blessing everyone now. And your entire orientation changes, your entire sense of self changes, and then your entire life changes.
Hmm.
You know, there's a part in the Course, Claire, where he says, my way is not difficult, but it is different. And the kind of thinking we're talking about here, it's not hard exactly. What's hard, though, is moving past our resistance to thinking this way. That's why we have to meditate. That's why we have to read and study and have a serious spiritual practice every day. It's not really hard. It's just 180 degrees away from the way we're taught to think.
Right.
And the Course in Miracles makes an interesting comment. It says, you achieve so little because you have undisciplined minds. And so it's about disciplining ourselves to think in a different way and thus act in a different way and thus experience life in a different way.
And say yes to the deeper knowing that we have about our next steps
right.
of what we're here to do and contribute and participate in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's an important part of it, too. The idea is that each of us has a direct radio link with the voice for God. In both Judaism and Christianity, there is this concept of the small, still voice for God. The problem is that the voice of the ego, which is very loud, the voice of the world, is, the Course in Miracles says, the ego speaks first and the ego speaks loudest. So we need to meditate in order to hear that small, still voice, and then, as you said, listen to it and act on it. Cultivate a life of reflection, cultivate a life of contemplation, cultivate a life of meditation, and then you begin to hear more consistently the voice of your heart, and you develop the personal musculature to stand on what you know.
Mm. I'm wondering if you can also speak about women's relationship to each other. Historically, there has been a difficulty women have had to come together under pressure, and there's a sense that to awaken to this next stage of our development, it really is, it's a marathon, it's like a collective journey, it's not a solo race anymore. And so I'm wondering what you see about where we need to grow ourselves to be able to come together as women and support each other in unprecedented ways.
You know, I was a young woman growing up when the feminism of the 70s emerged as the call that it was. And there were two pillars to that time of feminist thought. One had to do, of course, with women having equal rights, and the other had to do with the concept of sisterhood. It was a very strong sense that none of us were going to get there until and unless all of us got there. As the years went along, that second pillar seemed to have been dropped. And while we retained a sense of how important it is that women get equal rights, etc., we really lost this sense of sisterhood. And so I think you're bringing that up is so important because we must reclaim that. Gloria Steinem once said to me something along the line of, if any woman is trying to get something done, just like you, Claire, you and Catherine are working together. She was talking about how important it is when women work together. And one of the things that I was reading about one day is that if a woman, this is just in like sociology and social thought, but I find it very interesting. If a woman, let's say, is in a meeting and the prevailing ethos of the meeting is money is the bottom line, let's say, and one woman says something along the line of, well, you know, I'm not so sure money is the most important thing here. The safety of the customers should be the most important, or the well-being of the children should be the most important, something along that line. From a sociological point of view, if a woman speaks up, it is very common that people will just roll their eyes and her perspective will be minimized, invalidated, or dismissed. However, studies have shown that if even one other woman pipes up at that time and says, I agree with her, the entire energy of the room will shift.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes we will hear another woman say something that we feel in our hearts is true, but we see her get punished or made fun of or disapproved of, and we'll hold our tongues. And that's the big moral error.
So it's this willingness to really stand and to take a stand
yes.
for one another and support each other.
Yes.
If we're resonant with what's being spoken and the truth that's being told.
Right. Or even if you don't necessarily agree with her, but you see that a number is being done on her that is basically a misogynistic number. I have felt that way, for instance, about Sarah Palin. I completely, on a political level, disagree with Sarah Palin. My politics are completely opposite of Sarah Palin's. However, I've seen a projection of animus onto her that is ugly, whether it comes from the right or from the left. And I've had a taste of a little bit of that in my own life, so I know it when I see it. And it's not just men who do this. It's women sometimes, and I think we need to recognize that for what it is.
So, again, it kind of comes back to this willingness to be responsible and to take risks.
Well, but it's interesting that you say that, because if you think about the greater risk, in a big picture sense, lies in our keeping quiet. It's a risk of the survival of the planet, is it not?
Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for us to be able to move beyond the fear that we feel, to see this larger context, to actually know that the greater risk is to stay silent.
Right. The real risk is giving into your fear, because you give into it, it expands.
And so it's like in each of us actually coming forward and being willing to do that, the possibility that we open up for other women to come forward is exponential, would you say?
Yes, you know that quote that you were mentioning, the quote from A Return to Love that's often
yes.
been misattributed to Nelson Mandela. At the end of that quote, there's that business about how as you are liberated from your own fears, your presence automatically liberates others.
Mm-hmm.
The Course in Miracles says miracles arise from conviction. There's something that happens to a parent where you just get to this place where you find yourself saying something like, this or that will not happen in this house. You're just fierce. It's just, that's not going to happen here because it's unsafe or it's immoral or whatever. As we move into that place, seeing the entire world that way, whether it's starving children or unsafe corporate practices or whatever, if we just are convicted behind it, that's not going to happen here. That's not safe for future generations. That's simply not going to happen here. You attract, when you are in that space, cosmic support.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there's no one person around at the moment to agree with you, you stand your ground. There will be.
And so,
I mean, a meaningful life is not a popularity contest. And I think that's a big deal for women, because I think that we are embarrassed into submission too often. Once again, going back to Sister Giant, that's why we're looking about the witch burnings, because you realize,
right. Oh,
my God, I have a cellular memory of having been burned at the stake for having a passionate knowledge.
Right.
And so I'm reenacting that sense of trauma. And so I will become quiet, so I won't be burned at the stake. But then, as Martin Luther King said, your life begins to end on the day when you stop talking about things that matter most.
Hmm.
So that's where we are, figuring all that out, dismantling all that sort of dangerous bomb of implosion. That's where we are now, is figuring out just those pieces of the puzzle.
And so what's the possibility that you see if we collectively, as women, particularly in the West, holding so much power and leverage, begin to awaken the courage and willingness to step forward? What's possible? What's the future that could become possible in that?
Well, hold with me this one particular image. The President of the United States is talking to his or her aides. And we know a lot of the conversation that goes on in the Oval Office has to do with phrases like, oh, the health insurance companies won't let us do that. Oh, the pharmaceutical companies won't let us do that. Oh, the military won't let us do that. Oh, you know, labor won't let us do that. Can you imagine if they were talking about feeding children and they wanted to take money? For instance, during the campaign, President Obama, during his campaign, had talked about a $2 billion global fund that the United States would give $2 billion to help get started this global fund that would ensure that 75 million children on the planet that we now know do not get elementary school education would get it. Now, he has not mentioned it ever since Inauguration Day. Well, he doesn't have to, does he? But I, because there's no pressure there. But
right.
I have a vision in my heart that I hope other women hold as well, a day when if the conversation came up about that, his aides would be saying, oh, Mr. President, the women won't let us let go of that one. The women are on it about that education fund. And, you know, this is not just soft-hearted, fuzzy-thinking liberalism
right.
or something. I mean, I believe, and I think every woman knows, really, that there is no greater danger to our national security than large groups of desperate people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have these children and they're not fed and they're not educated and they're not taken care of, then by the time they're 14, of course they are vulnerable to ideological capture by people promoting genuinely psychotic belief systems.
Right.
So, you know, and this, of course, then that gets into the international women's conversation. I don't want to be unduly America-centric. I just know that there's this piece of it that's American that needs to be discussed. But the larger effort, of course, is global.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely, and it's an absolutely extraordinary and significant time for us to be women, and the power and possibility of everything that you are inviting us into is very sobering, and at the same time, I think what we all on a deeper level sense we really came here to participate in.
Even that's interesting, isn't it, when you say it's sobering? You know, we talk often about the fact that it's tragic for a child to be robbed of their childhood. I think it's also tragic for us to rob ourselves of adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
I think every phase is important for what it brings. And once you get a certain age, it's not fun to act like a girl when you're a woman now.
Right.
You know, I think that we all yearn for meaning. We all yearn to be sober, sober in the sense of emotional maturity and getting
right.
serious about the planet. I think it feels good.
Right.
It doesn't feel good to remain inside an immature conversation when you're, you know, 35, 45, 55 years old. It feels like cheap or something.
Right.
So there's a certain kind of sober that feels elegant and sophisticated and meaningful. It's not a conversation lacking in play. It's
right.
not a conversation lacking in joy. It's not a conversation lacking in drama. It's just that we have evolved and matured past the cheap drama, and we're into the serious drama, and there's nothing, I don't think, any more glorious than a girl becoming a woman and a woman becoming a good woman, and now what we're all trying to do together, and that's become great women. It's time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
And that's
absolutely.
What I see for us.
Absolutely. That's extraordinary and inspiring and a big invitation for us to rise, Marianne. So I'm just wondering, as we transition into being able to take some calls from people around the country and around the world and some questions, I'd just like to ask a little more about the specifics of the Sister Giant event for people who are feeling called to find out more about that and participate in what I truly sense from everything you're sharing is going to be a groundbreaking event for women.
Thank you.
It's February, what are the dates in February? It's
February 26th, 27th, and 28th. February 26th is a Friday, so we won't start until 7 o'clock on Friday night because I know a lot of people will be traveling. And then we will try to end by 1 o'clock on Sunday because, once again, people will be traveling back. So it'll be intense within that period of time. And also, the tuition that we're asking for is $250.
Which is unbelievably reasonable for
Well, also,
any kind
people
of
can get partial
seminar.
Scholarships if they need it. I don't
right.
want money to be something that holds anyone back from being
mm-hmm.
there. And we have, they've arranged for I think it's $99 for the hotel room at the LAX Hilton there where this is taking place. So
yes.
I don't want money to be something that holds anyone back from being. So
Wonderful.
They can, if you go to the registration page there, and you do
so
need to take advantage of
Marianne.com,
yes.
Marianne.com,
and then you see the Sister Giant banner there right on top, and you click that, and you get to the letter, and you see registration, and then when you go onto the registration page, you can see how to contact Wendy if you have any special needs financially that need to be addressed, or else you couldn't come.
Wonderful. That, I know, really want to encourage everybody to attend, because it's almost like, you know, we're all going to benefit from the conversations that take place there inside our collective field in terms of what gets unleashed by women gathering together in this way. It's like something begins to happen where suddenly these conversations and this awakening begins to influence us without even knowing why. So as many of us, I think, that can gather in these kinds of events, and Sister Giant sounds like a truly unprecedented and historic gathering. So
I thank you so much for saying that, Claire, because you yourself are doing that now. You know, your leadership and Catherine's leadership with this call and with this organization, I so appreciate your putting the conversation about Sister Giant into your field, because this is how it works, isn't it? We're all like little pods, and then when we come together, this is how it all expands. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. We're really just honored to be able to spread the word about such a generous and wonderful offering.
Thank you.
So please visit marianne.com to find out all the details about that. And if you'd like to find out more about our work, you can visit femininepower.com and download a free 75-minute audio called Awakening the New Feminine Power, How to Become Your Authentic Self and Co-Create the Future of Our World. You can visit femininepower.com. And we're going to be taking questions in just a moment. So if you have a question, Marianne, just press star 2 to raise your hand, and I will come and take your questions very shortly. But we just want to take a few moments to shine the light on the great work and evolutionary offerings of some of our event partners and co-sponsors. Firstly, we've been talking a lot about evolution tonight, and for those of you who are feeling called to participate in evolution, I want to tell you about an amazing new virtual university specifically created to help you build the capacities you need to evolve yourself in the world. It's called the Academy for Evolutionaries, and they're offering an amazing 9-week telecourse with Craig Hamilton starting very soon called Awakening an Evolutionary Relationship to Life. And you can learn more about it at academyforevolutionaries.com. That's academyforevolutionaries.com, or just click on the link in the email we sent you yesterday. And on the subject of evolution, I also want to tell you about an exciting new free online teleseries, very much like this one, but it includes men as well. It's called Awakening the Impulse to Evolve, and it features 18 of today's most inspired spiritual evolutionaries, including Michael Beckwith, Brian Swim, Ken Wilber, Gene Houston, Barbara Marks Hubbard, Craig Hamilton, and many more. And you can register for free for that online event at evolutionaryspirituality.com. That's evolutionaryspirituality.com. Okay, so let's see if we can take a live caller here. There's someone here from Denver in Colorado. Hello?
Oh my gosh, that's me.
Hello, what's your name?
Hi, this is Melanie Miller.
Hi, Melanie, welcome.
Hi, Marianne, I love you.
Oh, thank you so much. Hi.
I run into you from time to time over the years, and lots of miracles have happened I'd like to share with you sometime. I'm going through something now of this dismantling. It's like the third big intimidation scenario that I've created, and I'm absolutely clear I've created it. And I had a conversation with a friend today. We've been doing this Tony D'Souza awareness thing, and so all this stuff has come up about the dark side and all that. And we got into this conversation about the definition of responsibility. And I go with Werner Erhard's definition, which is not blame or guilt or shame or any of that stuff, and she didn't get it. And so I'm here struggling with this piece. I'm absolutely clear that all of my ungracious thoughts have created this current scenario. And I've been able to get a modicum of compassion for myself in a few instances. But I'm going in and out of fear and then knowing I am that I am. So the question has to do with, do I have to get much better than this to come to Sister Giant, and how can I sustain this place of knowing that I am that I am?
Well, I have two responses. Number one, you're human. You're going through stuff. Everyone on this call goes through stuff. I go through stuff. We're all human. So I'm not asking that only enlightened masters come to Sister Giant. That's number one. Number two, how do you retain the knowledge I am what I am? What I hear in a lot of people these days, Melanie, are people trying to work a path without a practice.
It's my practice, Marianne.
May I ask what your specific practice is?
I use tons of stuff from the Course moment to moment. You know, I resist the temptation to consider myself treated unfairly. Whatever
okay, hold on. Let
need,
me ask
I,
you. I understand what you're saying, but hold on a moment. What you just said to me was you use tons of stuff from the Course.
And I meditate.
Okay, but hold
and
on. I understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to get down to some points here. When you say you use tons of stuff from the Course, do you actually do the workbook of A Course in Miracles 1 to 365 to the best of your ability on a daily basis?
No, I pick and choose.
Yeah, that's my point. That is exactly my point, Melanie. And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of people these days. Let's say you were going to do yoga. It would be like people, instead of learning the ancient asanas, deciding, well, I'm just going to move my leg this way and move my arm this way because I saw a yoga video once and I think they put the arm up that way. No, you actually go to a yoga class or yoga instructor and you learn these very specific asanas that are ancient, right, and come from ancient wisdom.
This is embarrassing.
Well, don't be embarrassed. I mean, except be embarrassed in a good way, you know, just laugh. Because that's exactly what I mean. A Course in Miracles is a very specific curriculum. That's what it says. And if you just look at it, pick and choose, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's not, quote-unquote, doing the course. So
and that's the difference between sustaining
exactly.
that higher
exactly.
state.
So I hear a lot of people trying to do it for themselves without the serious daily practice of an actual path, which in the Course in Miracles terms is reading the text when and if you feel moved to read the text from the beginning, not just opening it somewhere, reading it from the beginning. The Course in Miracles, as a matter of fact, says if you read the end before the beginning, the experience can become, as the Course says, more traumatic than beatific. And the Course says the crux of the Course is doing that workbook, and that means you do day one, and then you do day two and day three. So people, you know, I hear this a lot from people, Melanie, who just kind of, it's kind of like a spiritual dilettantism, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and of course it doesn't produce the kind of results that you want. So you ask in your heart what path is true for you, and then you actually walk it. That's the answer to your question. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Melanie. That's a really helpful question. I think as you were just speaking to Marianne, that's where so many of us are actually struggling with this. It's very, very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's take a question from Instant Message here from Masha in San Francisco. While I do care about what's happening in the world, about those 17,000 children who are dying every day, I really look at how I spend my time and my money, and I have to confess most of my energy goes into myself. I'm pretty much thinking about my own life or those around me in my own world, and somehow I find I rarely have the time or money left to do something that's good for anyone else, particularly for people I don't personally know. It's not something I'm particularly proud of, but it's what's so. How can I move beyond my own self-absorption to really start to care about other people in the way that you're suggesting? Marianne, did we lose Marianne?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Should I say what I said over again?
Okay. Yes.
What
yes.
I said was that I think she's already begun doing what she says, or she could not have written that instant message. That letter was a letter to herself. You know, one of the things that I thought was very good over the last week since the Haitian earthquake is how there were so many opportunities for people to give $10. That was important because if you were not giving $10, and it didn't even have to be more than $10, but if you weren't giving what you could, even if it was $10, you were not participating in the wave of love that is the big what's happening now on the planet. The Course in Miracles says that we become generous out of self-interest. So I liked the $10 because it meant that, you know, who among us, if we're honest with ourselves, wouldn't have to admit, well, I could afford $10. And if you gave even $10, you were participating. There was a time when I was thinking about running for Congress not too long ago, and then as it turns out, I couldn't because of the rules about being in the Democratic Party, blah, blah, blah. But at the time, a friend of mine said, well, Marianne, you know, I'm not going to be one of your donors. I haven't sold a script this year, et cetera. And I said to him, I want a check from you, even if it's $25. And this doesn't even have anything to do with me. For you, because he had been going on and on and on about how he wanted me to run in this campaign. He wanted me to do this exploratory. And I said to him, Michael, for you at this point in your life, this isn't about me. It's not about my campaign. It's about being a real grown-up. If you're going to say that you think I should do this, you support it, you think it's what has to happen next, write me a $25 check. I've been out to restaurants with you. I know you can afford that. It's not even for me because my campaign opportunities are not going to be affected by one $25 check, but you'll be affected. You know, there's something here about that grown-up issue that you and I were talking about, Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you do as a grown-up is that you spend your money on what you believe. And a lot of times it goes back to what you were saying, when I've got it all together. You know, my mother used to say to me, you're the poorest philanthropist I've ever met. Because back when I had very, very little money, I took so seriously. I remember I'd read the letters from Danny Thomas about $16 to St. Jude's. I took that $16 contribution so seriously, right? I felt that my $16 a month I was playing my part in the healing of childhood leukemia. And you know what? I don't know how much that $16 helped St. Jude's every month, but I know how much it helped me.
Mm.
It helped me grow up.
Mm.
And you start acting that way, the universe begins to send zeros. Because the universe sees you as a major player, and it then sends you the resources to expand your garden.
Mm. So let's see if we can go to another caller. I have someone here in Oregon. Hello, good evening.
Good evening. Is this me?
Hi, this is you. What's your name?
Hi. My name is Melissa. It's very wonderful to speak with you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Hi.
You too. My question is, I know I'm not going to be able to attend Sister Giant because I live in Oregon and the airfare and I'm on disability and stuff.
Okay.
So that's the financial part of the question. My question is that I just from coming out of a marriage, he almost killed me and my mom. And my mom is dying and I'm taking care of her. And at the same time, I feel like I'm stunted and I'm just ready to burst and to grow, but I'm waiting for this season to get over. What do I do inside myself? I'm so sad at heart.
You know, Melissa, the time to be heartbroken is when your heart is breaking. There is a season for all things. And the Course in Miracles says only infinite patience produces immediate results. This is the season you're in. The end of a marriage is heartbreaking. Being with a parent at the end of their lives is heartbreaking. I've had enough heartbreaking ends of relationships in my life, and I've been with two dying parents and a dying sister. So I know what this heartbreak is like, and I know that it cannot be rushed. And I know that the grieving cannot be rushed. I can tell you, in terms of your relationship with your mother, you do not want to look back on this someday and feel that you were anything less than fully present. This is where you are now, and you want to be fully present for it. And I promise you, it will change you. and it will change you in positive ways, but not if you avoid or distance yourself from the experience while you're going through it.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense to me, and it really helps me out a lot. It helps my heart out. You know,
and you give yourself permission to cry, and you give yourself permission to be sad, and this too shall pass. But it won't pass because you try to make it go faster.
Okay, it seems like you know me so well. I've only talked to you one other time.
Well, there's only one of us here, and we're all going through the same things. Mm-hmm. So if we deeply excavate our own experience, we have a deeper understanding of other people's as well.
Okay, so just keep things cool and don't try to rush them.
Well, I don't know about keeping things cool. I would say to you, as I would say to anyone, I hope you have a serious daily spiritual practice of prayer and meditation and study, whether it's the Course in Miracles or any other, that will save you.
Okay.
And that will give you the strength that you need.
Okay. So, okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have another question here from Amy in Sarasota, Florida. I have heard you over the years speak about forgiveness, and philosophically I've always agreed with you. However, when I look at the state of the world, I find I've become very angry at mostly white men who put us in a situation to begin with, and now suddenly we women are the ones who are gathering to try to clean it up. How can I forgive those who acted on behalf of their own self-interest with such dire consequences?
Well, first of all, I'm not enrolled in the formulation. I don't think that men are the only ones who have acted out of gross self-interest. And I don't think that those who have come to saturate so much of our civilization with values of greed and domination would have been able to do so without the implicit conspiring of so many women. So I think that, you know, the Course in Miracles says only what you are not giving can be lacking in any situation. If all we do is point at men, then this is a game we play to avoid taking responsibility for the part that we've played in the problems and the parts that we have failed to play in the solutions. And I also think if any woman is honest, our experience would teach us, I know in my own, women have been obstructive in my life every bit as much as men have been, and men have been the ones to teach me and free me sometimes more than women. I can't in my own life see where one gender or the other either messed me up more or helped me more. In terms of society, I think recognizing the primacy of the white male has to do with historical forces and historical origins, which is part of what we will be trying to figure out and understand in Sister Giant. But, you know, I'm reminded of a line from Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "You have very little morally persuasive power with people who can feel your underlying contempt." Mm-hmm. So if we don't rid our own hearts of the judgment and the anger and the unforgiveness that we feel, then we will not have any morally persuasive power with the very people that we need to be able to hopefully persuade to move in a different direction. So forgiveness is not only our responsibility, but it's our own salvation, because that anger is a poison within us.
So it's forgiving ourselves, almost forgiving our power away. Being unwilling to step into
Yes, in large part, which once again goes into that giant, the sister giant conversation. Mm-hmm. What made us so quiet?
Yeah. Let's see if we can take one last caller this evening. I have someone here from Port Credit. Hello, good evening.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Susan. I'm calling from Canada.
Hi, Susan. Welcome.
You know, I believe that the biggest problem in this world is the fact that we don't exchange with one another. You know, we talk the big games, you know, we put the events together, we do all of these different things. Only the people who get rich on them are the people who are putting the events together.
The only people who get return on them, you said?
The only people who get rich on them are the people who are putting the events together.
Interesting.
When are we as women going to start supporting women? I've been working on a project for 33 years. I put over $500,000 of my own money into it. I have maybe $33,000 left that I need to finish it. I can't finish it. It has many of the answers as to who we are, what we are, why we're here, what our 13 different aspects are, how we pull in all the different things that go around it, and I can't even find anyone to help me. Now, after working 18 hours a day for the last 4 or 5 years, creating awareness, the only thing it's gotten me is minus $18,000 in income in 2008 or 2009, and who the heck knows what 2009 looks like, because I can't even afford to do the income taxes or pay an accountant to figure it out. We just start working together, ladies.
So interesting, though, because
no,
you...
I for all this abundance that's in
do
the
you
world...
Do you have a question?
Yes, we don't have a money problem in this world. There's more money. The banks just keep cranking it out.
Susan Love, I just have to stop you there. I'm just wondering if you actually have a question here.
Yes, the question is that we live in a world that... By the way that they create money and everything like that, we should be in the most abundant planet in all of the universes. There's something drastically wrong with everything in this world. It's wrong with how we're exchanging with one another.
So,
women,
Susan Love, I just need
helping.
To stop you again. I'm just wondering what it is that you'd like to ask, what the question is.
Yes, why are the women not helping the other women? Where are all these people with all this great abundance that can help other people? We're not helping the right people.
Okay, good. So the question is,
you know,
I got it, Claire. It's interesting though, because you started out by saying that the people who are putting on these events are getting rich.
I was going to say that's really
but hold on. I just want to make a point. When then you yourself pointed out how much money you've lost trying to do this. So I just want to point out that from my own experience, there's been much more money lost than gained from doing these kinds of projects, just as you yourself have said.
I was
That's number
jump
one.
In and actually say that.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah. Number two, I think everybody on this call could hear in the voice of the woman who just spoke,
Susan.
Susan, the level of desperation, the level of frustration. I think we have all had our moments of complete and total exasperation. So I think we can all feel compassion for it, but I also think that every woman on this call recognizes that each and every one of us are responsible for burning through whatever temptation we have to blame everybody else, to talk about how the problem is the world, the problem is the banks, the problem is people who put on seminars, the problem is this, the problem is that. And, of course, when your personality is holding all that anger, all we do is turn people off. All we do is make it difficult for people to hear us. So I think I speak for everybody on the call in sending a lot of love to Susan, because we understand the frustration. We understand that she's absolutely at her wit's end, but also in supporting her in doing the work that each and every one of us knows that we have to do, and that means taking complete and total and 100% responsibility for our own experience. Because when you do that, you come to understand that other people might have power to do this or to do that, but each and every one of us has God within us. And when we align ourselves with that understanding at a deep, meaningful level, we know that there are no limitations in the outer world that can hold us back. And I claim that not only for everyone on this call, I claim it for Susan too.
Mm. Wonderful. So let's see if we can just take one last call. Actually, I'm just looking at the time. I think we have a couple more minutes here. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I think that's me, right?
Yes.
It's okay, I wasn't sure. My name is Julie.
Hi, Julie.
I'm calling from Indiana.
Oh, welcome. What's your question?
I the last call kind of got to me just now a little bit, because what I was trying to say, if I can, hi Marianne, I just love you. I've been your admirer for the longest time, and I just wanted to, could I reiterate what Marianne was saying about, you know, about helping. I have been struggling for the last 2 years with major post-traumatic stress disorder, and gotten to the point where I won't even leave my house. But I take care of a lot of rescued animals, have a private rescue animals, and that has helped me. But I have questions over and over again, you know, trying to do meditation, trying to do yoga, trying to find myself. I had lost myself in this, and even though I don't like to label myself with having something like that, but I pretty much lost myself in this feeling of being alone and not getting the help, and not having money, since I couldn't leave, I couldn't work, so the load is on my husband. And then I started really praying like a week or so ago. And I realized that what I needed to do is help. And Haiti happened, and this idea overcame me that I should do something and stop feeling sorry for myself, because, and that's what you were saying, that, you know, that is healing, and that actually helps us focus on the world and on others. And I've always wanted to help, and I was praying that I could help someone. And so it wasn't my idea. It came to me as an answer to my prayer and my question. And so I am actually having no money at all. I mean, literally no groceries. And, you know, the lady just now, she I understand where she came from. But there's always someone worse off as you are. And it goes on even from my side. But, you know, we have
Julie,
no
Julie, love, can I just ask you, we're just running out of time.
Oh,
do you have
sorry,
a question?
Okay.
Yeah, we're a little short on time.
Well, I just wanted to...
But what you're sharing is really profound in terms of being able to, even in the midst of your struggle, really rise up and respond to
and
the
help.
Pull.
So what I was trying to say is, well, actually, I just, lady before confused me a little bit, and it threw my question off, and I didn't think I was going to get on here.
Do you have one right now? Just basically, you know, again, it's a question about just the tension of how do we rise up and actually... respond to the call to help others?
If she could just reiterate that people need to be there for each other and help, and
yeah.
Like I'm helping.
Okay,
maybe.
Well, you know what? This is what I'm hearing. What you need is a miracle. And what I want to share with you is that the first sentence in the text of A Course in Miracles is the following. There is no order of difficulty in miracles. And so right now you're living in a not great place, and you've got post-traumatic stress, and you don't have money for groceries, etc. So what I share with you, and what I invite every woman on this call to share, is the absolute conviction that in God, all things are possible, and that where you are now is not where you'll be tomorrow, and that yesterday's thinking produced today's conditions, and as your mind is healed now, and as spirit moves into you, and takes all thoughts of poverty and turns them to thoughts of wealth, and all thoughts of blame and turns them to thoughts of blessing, and all thoughts of limitation and turn them into thoughts of miraculous, unlimited breakthrough, your tomorrow will be different. And that is what I believe, and I invite you now to lean on my faith. And I know that I'm not the only woman on this call who has that faith in her heart. So for those of us who have faith, no matter what religious or non-religious or spiritual or non-spiritual background we come from, if we believe there is a force, if we believe that there is a higher power that can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, we see that in you, at work in your life now, just as we see that in Susan at work in her life right now. And we take this moment to think about every other woman on this call from all over the world. The Course in Miracles says, you do not ask for too much, you ask for too little. And so we ask for complete abundance and blessing and protection. I ask for a blessing on our host today, on Catherine and on Claire. And we extend that blessing from our hearts, where our true power lies, not only to every woman on this call, but to our loved ones and our friends and everyone in this country and everyone in this world and everyone on this planet. And we know that this force in our hearts is on the move, but it's underused. And we, each and every one of us now, devote ourselves that we might be containers and vessels for this force, that love might not only heal our own lives, but might heal the world. And so it is.
And so it is.
Amen.
Amen. Marianne, it's been a privilege and an honor to have you with us this evening.
Thank you. It's been an honor to speak to you also, and very interesting talking to you. So thank you so much for the conversation.
Well, and just in taking in everything that you have been sharing, it just really feels to me that this level of responsibility that you're inviting us into is not only the path to our authentic liberation, but really a true womanhood.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that and the space that you hold, and I hope I'll see you at Sister Giant or talk to you further. I appreciate the connection.
Absolutely. And so the details about Sister Giant, again, just before we end, 26th, 27th, and 28th of February in
yes.
Los Angeles.
Yes.
You're starting late on Friday evening so that way people can travel.
Right, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Oh, that's great. So people. And what time on Sunday?
We'll try to be done by 1. Because, once again, people will be needing to travel.
Right, so that's a really great window for people to be able to get, you know, to and from anywhere in the country. And just a little bit about the Sister Giant event. Marianne will review the historic forces that have suppressed the voice of Western women, as well as those that now challenge us to speak our truth. She will lead us on a personal journey from understanding our history to reclaiming our personal power and ultimately to becoming a powerful force in eradicating hunger and poverty on our planet and for the future today. So I really want to encourage everybody listening who is able to attend to come to Sister Giant next month. Thank you so much, Marianne.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
You too.
Bye.
Good night. If you're interested in diving deeper into the conversation with us, be sure to join our Facebook or Gaia groups where you can participate in discussion forums on any of the topics we discussed today. You can go to Facebook and search for Feminine Power Global Community or just click on the link in the email that we sent you this morning. If you have any friends who you think might be interested in joining us on this free series, we'll be going through for many more months with some extraordinary speakers coming up, including Alanis Morissette, Joan Borsenko, Melissa Etheridge, and many, many others. And if somebody sent you this audio, or you found it in some hidden corner of the Internet and you'd like to listen to the dialogues that are either upcoming or in our archives, you can visit womenontheedgeofevolution.com. That's womenontheedgeofevolution.com. And finally, I want to thank our team at Feminine Power and all the sponsors who've made this event possible, including our event partners, Gaia Community, The Shift Moving, our co-sponsors at Integral Enlightenment, I Evolve Practice Community, Agape International Spiritual Center, Enlighten Next, The Next Step Integral, The First 30 Days, Hub, Humanity Lights Brilliance, and The Great Integral Awakening. And coming up next on Saturday, this Saturday at 9:30, we are absolutely thrilled to be hosting the spiritual leader of the United Centers for Spiritual Living, Reverend Dr. Kathy Hearn, leading our communities towards greater levels of wholeness, health, and happiness in these times of change, challenge, and social fragmentation. We all, men and women alike, can take solace in the work of Reverend Dr. Kathy Hearn, or Dr. Kathy as she's affectionately known. She's a passionate spiritual and community leader who's tirelessly tours the United States and the world to share the Global Heart Vision, a unifying spiritual manifesto that seeks to balance and guide the further evolution of humanity as stewards of our planet and its inhabitants. Living in our hyper-masculine, information-driven age, it is women who are emerging as the leaders of a new spiritual age. And Dr. Kathy is one such leader. Her call for the exploration and embrace of deeply unifying spiritual principles and ideals in search of a life that really works is a call we hear and to which we can all respond. Reverend Dr. Kathy Hearn is the spiritual leader of the United Church of Religious Science, which have now become the United Centers for Spiritual Living. She's the founder of the Pacific Church of Religious Science in San Diego, where she has been the senior minister for 15 years. Dr. Kathy currently serves on the Leadership Council for the Association of Global New Thought and is a member of the Religious Science International United Centers for Spiritual Living Life Living Visioning Bridge. Dr. Kathy has traveled around the United States and is internationally known to share the Global Heart Vision. She lives in La Jolla, California. So please join us this Saturday at 9:30 for that dialogue, and Catherine Wood Thomas will be back with us to host Reverend Kathy, and we will be seeing you then. And right now, we are going to just hang up the phones, and I will be hosting our Evolutionary Women's Cafe. So if you would like to participate in discussion and dialogue about this evening's conversation, you'll need to register for the Evolutionary Women's Cafe by following the instructions in the email with the access codes for today's call that we sent you, and you can register and join us on Maestro Conference. If you'd like to participate in that, we'll also be having these evolutionary cafes at the end of every call, so encourage you to join us if you can't stay on the call this evening for one of these exciting new conversation cafes that we are creating to support deeper engagement around the series. So until next time, keep evolving and co-creating the future, and I will see all of those of you who are going to join us at the evolutionary cafe in just a moment. Thank you so much, everyone. God bless, and see you again soon. Good night.